This particular lecture was recorded on January 21st, 2007, and is a lecture on First Rondo. The recording picks up a bit into the lecture. I hadn't turned the recorder on right at the beginning. I talk a little bit about the name First Rondo, which also means slow movement ternary, it's often called. It's a three-part form, a simple rondo form, ABA, which is typically found in slow movements. So the lecture begins after I've done that much of the information and continues on for about 40 minutes, I would say.
So you will find them typically slow movements and sometimes also as these final minuet movements that you find in some of the early Haydn works. That's just a place to be aware of it. But mostly think slow movement when you think this. But not only slow movements, as I've said, Haydn is much more inclined to use it in the trios and the string quartets, but he doesn't use it in other areas. So, for example, I've only come across three instances in all the Haydn symphonies. There's 107 Haydn symphonies. He uses it three times, and only three times in the piano sonatas. So, in other words, it's a form that he tends to use only in certain areas, which is interesting. Okay? So, I don't know if there's a specific reason for that or not. If we're seeing some sort of stylistic thing, I don't know. Beethoven loves this. This is a Beethoven form par excellence. He uses it in the piano sonatas, especially the early ones. And that's interesting because, you know, the early Beethoven piano sonatas are mostly modeled on Haydn's. And so as a result, he's showing that some of the violin sonatas, if you've played those through those, use them. He hardly ever uses it in string quartet or piano trio. It's not. So, in other words, he prefers it earlier in his career, as I said earlier, and tends to use it more in smaller forms. As far as I know, there is not a single Beethoven symphony that uses this form. Mozart doesn't like it. It's not a Mozart form. So, a whole slide just for that. Okay. So, Mozart just doesn't use it. Okay. Now, here's the other great big area you're going to find it, and that's in the Romantics. This is the form that typically is used for those short character pieces of the Romantic composers. This is the form. Character pieces of all sorts. If you remember from music history, a character piece is a short piece for solo instrument. It's kind of the equivalent, I would say, it's kind of the equivalent of a lead, you know, an art song, a lead for solo piano. The character piece, sometimes for instrument and piano. And it'll have all kinds of names, bagatelle, nocturne, prelude, fantasy, intermezzo, kitchen sink, whatever. And it also can include things like waltzes and mazurkas. Now, it's not the only form used for those. Some of those have a tendency to be pure rondos. They have a tendency to be second rondos, even sonata form movements sometimes. But it's very, very common. Most salon pieces, little tiny salon pieces, are either this or three-part song form. And we'll be talking about the differences between the two. So in other words, this is a form you're going to encounter a lot. There's a lot of it. And it takes us out of the Mozart string quartet genre we've been mostly stuck in up to now. Yeah, it takes us forward a bit. So here's the general form of the thing. Just, it's very simple. The main rondo section, which is A, okay, this guy right there, A, notice I'm using uppercase. When I use an uppercase letter, I'm referring to a section. Remember, lowercase letters refer to phrases. So the uppercase means an entire section, and the uppercase A is referring to the main body of the rondo. It's followed, generally speaking, by a short transition or a long transition. Hard to say, really. Sometimes the transitions can really fool you. They can be so long, they sound like a separate section. Then the B, capital B, which is a contrasting section, typically with a transition at the end, and then going back to our original. So the rondo idea is very, very simple in this form. It's just a return. It's a single return. You see, it's got the A here at the beginning and then the A at the end, and so with a single contrasting part in the middle. Rondo forms in general consist of the idea of A, B, A, C, A, D, A, E, A, F, A, and so on, back and forth. This first rondo, the thing only happens once. A, B, A. And so that's why Schoenberg called this first rondo. He gave it that name. So that's the general form. You can see it's very open. There's a lot of possibility. Now, a few notes here. Why is this not three-part song form? You all know three-part song form, how that works, part one, part two, part three. And so its relationship to three-part song form is as follows. At least one of the parts is a song form. This is the difference. So, for example, it is very common for part A, for big A there, big A here, to be a three-part song form. So in other words, what we're talking about is the next level up of structure. If you've been following along, you know, what we've been doing is we've been building our structures and building blocks. We took a single phrase, and then we hooked the phrase together into either a period or a phrase group, and that became a one-part song form. Then we took the one-part song form and hooked that into a two-part song form. And then we hooked that into a three-part song form, which then became a compound song form. So in other words, if you think about it, we're building things up bit by bit. Bit by bit out of these building blocks. The first rondo, one of the parts, usually A, will itself be a song form, and most likely it'll be a three-part song form. Okay? So this is the next level of structure upwards. A three-part song form can occur within a first rondo. Now the next question you may have bubbling in your head, depends on how well you remember stuff we covered, is how is this different from a compound song form then? Remember that a compound song form is the union of two song forms, like a minuet and trio. The minuet proper is probably a three-part song form, and remember the trio is typically, as you should know well by now after done all those, two or three-part song form. It should be one or the other. So how is this different from that? Okay, what's the difference between first rondo and compound song form? The difference lies in the separateness. In a compound song form, there's a real closure. In other words, like in a minuet and trio, the minuet totally closes off before you go to the trio. And the trio generally totally closes itself off before you go back to the minuet. It's so much so, if you remember when we did the assignment on song forms, I gave you all those Schubert waltzes to do, that great big packet of Schubert waltzes. We could treat the trios as separate pieces from the waltzes. When the waltz had a trio, we could treat it as an entirely separate entity. That's how different they are. In a compound song form, the two song forms are generally really, really different. A first rondo, on the other hand, is a continuous whole. Yes, Paul?
So if we had something that looks like a three-part song form, except there were no transitions,
It might be. Again, the transitions don't make it, the transitions don't necessarily make it that. What makes it is that the sense of a single entity going. And there are a couple of other criteria going on. But there's no big, but for example, you may not have a transition, but A, the big A section, may be quite open into the B section, kind of move into it. So you have to decide sometimes. It can be a little dicey once in a while. But I don't think you'll find it that much difficulty. Also, the notation, musical notation will help you a lot. Because if it's a compound song form, the middle section will say trio up on the top, which will help a whole lot. You'll have a trio. But more than anything else is that there's a sense of a much greater whole.
So in that case, yes. I shouldn't be tempted to analyze something as a compound song form based on the way it sounds. I should actually look for trio.
Look for the word trio and also on the way it sounds too, though. Do both. Because that continuous whole of first rondo, the continuous whole, is very important. Well, we'll be listening to some, and I think you'll hear that there's a really distinct difference. Because the sense is that the two really belong together. The parts belong together, and there's not this big separation as there is in trio. So, it can be a little tricky, though. It really can be. But another thing, though, to notice, in a compound song form, the return to the original song form is a da capo, as a rule. It never is in first rondo. Okay, so the return is always written out, and it's almost always different. As a matter of fact, compound song form, first rondo can start flirting on the edges of sonata form. And there are instances of them being almost indistinguishable from each other. So the differences, again, can be subtle, but I think once you get going on it, you won't find it so difficult. So let's talk about that first main section, the rondo section. The structure of big letter A. To begin with, it is a song form of some kind. Now, what that means, of course, is that it's one part, two part, incipient, three part, expanded three part. It can be this. It can be small. It can be short. It can be very, very long. It can be a fully expanded three-part song form with codetta, with introductions, with expanded phrases. That A can be 20 minutes long. Usually isn't, thank God. Unless it's one of Beethoven's slow movements. But it can be very large.
Does the first A in particular have to be the song form?
Right. As usual, it almost always is, because you'll find that as a rule it's going to be a one or two part form. It's very, very, I've never come across any other thing. So, yeah, at any rate. Three-part song form, but don't forget that song form can include stuff like incredibly long single phrases. You know, a very long expanded single phrase can be a one-part song form. A period can be a one-part song form. An expanded period, a double period. There are all these possibilities. So in other words, that part A can be just about everything you've ever learned, including phrase groups. Remember that a phrase group is a one-part song form as well. So everything, but more likely three-part song form. These guys liked, you know, this is mostly a form of the classical, late classical, and early romantic. And those people liked three-part stuff. This is the whole era of the great arch form. This is when they loved everything to kind of curve back on itself. So as a rule, you're going to find that. It's also important that it's in the home key. And that's very important. It's in the tonic key. And it will end in some kind of authentic cadence of some sort. Depends on what. I mean, it might just be the simplest authentic cadence in the world, or it might be one of those fabulously long delayed cadences that's then expanded out after that. You know, the cadence itself can really can go on for quite a while, or it can be very, very matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So let's take an example. We're not going to use notation for this. We're going to do this by ear. Save ourselves some printout and to go through it. Now what you'll be seeing is I'm going to go through the A part. This is a slow movement of a Schubert sonata. And I'll be going through, this will be an animated chart, and it just plays itself along, and it'll show you where it is. All of these are available on the website as well, so you can go over them yourself, which will really help you with listening. I haven't checked the volume level, so let's hope they're okay. Okay. That's our maximum volume we have in the system, so. Ah, wait a minute. Ha ha. Nice. So the pack right now where we are, second phrase. So we're starting out with a contrasting period. That's part one of a three-part song form. Now, part two. Two phrases in A minor. Two more phrases in A minor. Okay, Phrygian 2 to cadential 6-4 to a half cadence, and part 3. Contrasting period with an expanded consequent. Now, part, the second phrase is going to change. What's going to happen is he's going to evade his cadence right here. And expansion from there. Cadential 6-4 again. And our pack. All righty. I want to go over that one more time to give you a chance to do this all by ear. But analysis by ear is really valuable. It's really valuable. So let's go back over it again and give you a chance to hear it also now that I have the volume sort of worked out.
Parts of the song form?
Yeah, those are the parts of part one, part two, and part three.
Which of the, which A, B, A, B, or
A? A, we're listening to big A right now.
Oh, we're just listening to A.
Remember, that's a song form, right? It's a three-part song form. So all we're listening to right now is A itself. Okay, so in other words, the main body of the rondo. All right, here we go again. So. So it's four measures, four, one, two, three, four. And second phrase, two, three, Gesundheit. And this is going to come to a full cadence. Pack. Okay, that's part one. Part two. A major, which is followed by the same phrase in minor. Remember how part two of song forms tends to be more loosey-goosey. Okay, and then this is an expanded Phrygian two, cadential 6-4. Half cadence, 5-7, and one, contrasting period. Measure 3, measure 18, measure 20, now. Now listen for the evaded cadence, which is going to be where it changes. Change, right? Cadential 6-4 in the pack. Okay? So, in other words, that could easily be, couldn't it, a piece in its own right, pretty much like that. But that's the first part of the rondo. First part. Okay? So, any questions about what we just heard? How it works? Kind of fun, I think, to do analysis without notes in front of you. We use our eyes a little too much. Let's use our ears more. Okay. So let's talk about the transition then. The transition at the end of Big A, the big rondo, it can be very, very short. It may not even exist, or it can be very long. It can be so long that, again, it'll fool you into thinking the form is other than it is. That's not that uncommon. It isn't required, but they're pretty common. So I figured, what the hell? Let's go through a piece that has a great, big, huge transition. And this particular piece, as a matter of fact, again, the transition could fool you into thinking that the form is something other than it is. It really could. So I've chosen the Chopin Nocturne, Opus 62, number 2. This is Rubinstein's recording that he made in the 1940s. It's not the one from the 1960s that most people are familiar with. It's an earlier recording. I chose it because he was, even if anything, more to the point and direct in his playing when he was younger than when he was older. If you're not used to Rubinstein Chopin playing, it can sound a little bit cold at first. But it's really wonderful. And it's interesting to hear somebody who is a much older generation. He studied with Joachim, Joseph Joachim, Brahms's friend. Brahms was a living composer to him. And yet, he's one of the most modern pianists you'll ever hear. So he's an interesting man. I used to hear him a lot when I was a kid. I'd go hear him because he was you know, very much alive and kicking. I even played for him once, which was a great thrill. You know, nice man. Smoked great big cigars. Smelly cigars. Cuban cigars. You know, but a nice guy. Great sense of humor. Kind of ribald sense of humor. So in other words, he liked to tell dirty jokes. But he was, which of course I would never do, right? No. Profanity has never been heard out of my lips. So Rubinstein playing the Chopin Nocturne, Opus 62. And this is a great example of a piece with a really expanded transition. Volume okay? So we're going to go to a delayed half cadence. And then slightly ornamented. This is a double period. Pack there. Now part two starts is a chain phrase. First an F, okay, then a G sharp minor, F sharp minor, E major, on a half cadence, and then that half cadence is expanded. And then part three, single period. And then a, ooh, nice shift. 29, quasi inversion. And the transition. And then it goes into the middle section. It goes into the first part of the rondo. So you see what we have here first. Let's go. We'll go over it again. But this is a big three-part song form. Starts out with a double period. A real double period. This is a good example of one if you want to take a look. Then part two is just messy. That's the best way. It's a chain phrase that's constantly modulating, and it was actually rather hard to outline as a result. Then part three is just a compressed version of part one. It's a single period rather than a double. Just to remind you, that does not make this an incipient three-part song form. Remember, incipient is just one phrase of the original, returning, and this still returns the whole thing. Then the transition is so substantive, there's so much there, that it almost will make you think that you're hearing a new section or a new theme.
The transition, I think, in this song kind of serves at the end like a coda.
It does. Very good. Well, you know this piece. Good for you. Yeah, bravo. Yeah, no, you're right. It does. So, yeah. But if you think it's actually a separate section, the form is going to elude you then. You're going to have problems. I'd like to go through it again if you can do it, because it's good to do this kind of listening twice. The light in here is a little poor for this color scheme. I know some of the reds and blues get sort of washed out. But if you look it on the website, it'll be clearer and all that. All right, here we go again. So, parallel double period. Into the half cadence, and measure nine. Notice it ends in the key of the dominant, if you're listening carefully. F sharp minor. Chain. 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 Great big half cadence. And part three. Full pack and transition. Hints of C minor. Pack here. And this is a modulation, basically. Half cadence. Okay, and then I just cut him off. It's like slamming the keyboard lid down on Arthur. Stop playing! so on as he goes into the middle section. Okay. As you probably remember from your own work with this stuff always seems very clear in hindsight when somebody's showing it to you. It's when you have to sit there with the damn thing in front of you going, oh, what's going on? on here. It's always a lot of fun. All right. So let's go into that middle section, shall we? B. In Rondo terminology, this would be called the first excursion. Excursion is a term often used. But it's typical for this particular form to call it the interior theme. And do not use the term secondary theme, because secondary theme is a sonata form term, and you want to absolutely reserve it for that. The word interior theme is because the middle section, the first excursion, if you will, the interior theme, tends to be strikingly different. The biggest thing is a striking change in modality. Generally speaking, it will go to the parallel minor or major. It'll go to parallel. That's a big thing with this, and it's very, very typical. Very, very typical. And usually, as a rule, it's got its own important thematic area. Another thing that can also happen with this, and it doesn't have to, but it can, is a striking change in tempo. It can become very, very different. That happens a lot. For example, Chopin, that's not at all unusual for the middle section of a nocturne to be fast. Or the other way around. There's some etudes that might start fast, go slow, or the other way around. You know, there's all sorts of changes. But the fact is, this middle section is going to be strikingly different as a rule, strikingly so. As I said, a change of style. However, if you study it carefully, you can usually find that B is derived some way from A. It's probably not going to be gratuitously different, in other words. It's just going to be, but it will sound different at first. As a rule, the interior theme would be derived. It probably goes without saying that if it's Haydn or Beethoven writing it, it's much more likely that the interior theme will be derived than, say, if it's Schumann, who tends not to be a derivative type of guy, who tends to write fresh. Mm-hmm. So we're going to listen to a Haydn quartet. And this is a good example of that middle section being very clearly derived. Very, very clearly derived from A, this being Haydn. This is what we call the Reiter Quartet, the nickname for it, Opus 74, number 3. It's one of the ones from the English tours in the 1790s. It's called that because of the first movement, and the last also, which have this sort of horsey, clip-cloppity thing. Second movement is just glorious. It's this beautiful, very intimate, quiet, beautiful piece. So, you're ready? Here we go. It's an E major, I believe. So I'm being a little bit broader now on the thing. As you see, it says contrasting period. I'm not listing the two phrases. That's the antecedent. Consequent. I'm being broader so I can get the whole thing on one slide. In this wonderful, there's an augmented six chord for you. Two, cadential 6-4. And it goes to 5. It modulates to 5 and cadences. That's our period. Part two. Part one repeated. I forgot. So the change of color indicates the repeat. That's your half cadence. That's a 5-9. Haydn loved 5-9s. One. Modulating. There's the A sharp. Here's that augmented six chord again. German. G natural. F sharp in the bass. Cadential 6-4. Part two is a single phrase. Mm-hmm. Using Phrygian II. Going to a half cadence. And part three. Very similar, but modified so as to end in the tonic. For example, here's a change, listen. Whoa. It's a 7-7. Consequent? 7-7? 1-2-6? Prudential 6-4? 5-7? 1. And interior theme. Notice how it's in minor. And then it goes to 6. It's actually in C major. German augmented 6. Cadential 6-4. Then we enter a transition. It's a chain phrase. Descending fifth sequence. Re, sol, do. Then, augmented 6 chord to get us to a half cadence. Right there. And A is an ornamented version of part one. Slight ornaments. Coming to the end of our contrasting period. Augmented 6 chord again. An ultimate measure. To 5. Then part 2. And then these tremolos. It's a big deal in 1792. Half cadence. And part 3. All these ornaments are written out. So we're coming to the cadence, the end of part 3. That's okay. So that should be the end. And coda. Straightforward. It's pretty, pretty straightforward. If you listen through that movement a couple of times, you'll notice that Haydn, something to be looking for, Haydn is actually playing with harmonic ideas as motives. In that particular move, Haydn would use all kinds of motives, but one of his favorite things he would do sometimes is a particular harmonic motion, which would become motivic. It's pretty clear what the harmonic motion in that particular piece is that's motivic. It is. The augmented 6 chord, right? That's a great big deal. He uses it in every single section in one way or another. And the augmented 6 chord is often complemented, if you remember, by the Neapolitan. The two are complementary chords together. So he tends to use those a lot together. All right. Where did I put my... I always put my clicker... There it is. I can't tell you how many times I have lost this. The people over at Cal have gotten very good. Oh, that's Scott's. What's it doing there? You know, and I come back and I say, here it is. Oh, thank you. I just keep constantly losing it. Now, we go back to our final A. Now, this, in other words, the return. If the original stayed in 1, That is, if the original A, the first part of it, stayed in 1, the return to A is likely to be verbatim. That's very likely. However, if the original A modulated, if it ended on the dominant or something like that, the return to A will be rewritten to return to the tonic. What's interesting about it, though, is you will not find it as a da capo. Even if the original A stayed in 1, you won't find the words da capo there as a rule. Either they will write it out in full, or they'll change it. Usually they'll change it in various ways, the way Haydn did. He wrote out all those ornaments for Solomon, his lead violinist. So as a rule, it will either be verbatim or changed. It's possible for it to be changed a great deal. It's possible. It can happen that you know, completely change it. The repeat of A may be ornamented. It may be reorchestrated. And remember, by that can be just different piano writing as well as different orchestration. It may be shortened. It may be otherwise varied. Almost anything's possible. And especially when the Romantics got their hands on it, they had a tendency to start playing with it. Chopin liked to play with it a lot because he's structurally a little more with it. The composers, Schumann tended not to bother it because he was not a technically sophisticated writer. He was a good writer, a wonderful writer, but his technique was not strong. So generally speaking, he tended not to develop things. Chopin, on the other hand, was a superlative technician, and so he would prefer to develop. It is fairly typical for first rondo forms to feature a coda. The coda is typically sectional. Codas, as a rule, are easy to analyze formally because they're usually just section after section after section. The sections may dovetail into each other using elided cadences and so on, but they may not. It's tremendous freedom. Every coda is a law unto itself. I can make no other generalizations about codas except for that, which is one of the reasons why a lot of those guys liked them so much. Beethoven, of course, was Mr. Coda. He loved codas because they were freedom from all of the other restrictions of form. And so he just loved to write codas. And in fact, Beethoven's codas sometimes are as long as the rest of the movement. They tend to have quite long codas, but they need to be recognized as such.